Radio, your gamer's role.
Hey everybody, welcome to Eberron Renewed, an actual play 5th edition D&D podcast set in the Eberron setting. If you listen as we put things out, you know that last week we completed an arc, and so as per usual, it is time for us to satisfy our narcissistic tendencies and just talk about what we did that was great. So my name's Jeff, I'm one of the players.
I'm Eric, your dungeon master.
And I'm Philip, another one of the players.
Yeah, we are joined by Philip today to talk about the last arc. Because a lot of things happened that he wanted to talk about. Mainly, I think, yell at Eric. So
yeah, this is mostly the players versus Eric for Eberron Reviewed.
Okay, so let's get started. So beginning of the first episode, this was called Into the Gloaming, and that's what we did. We went into the Forbidden Forest.
I didn't say I was creative with the titles of these arcs.
Fair enough. And we try to be like as wary as we can of all the sorts of possible things that might happen to us in the forest. We've been in forests and we've been attacked in forests, and I don't think any of us saw this one coming.
No, this was it was crazy.
Yeah, so we get confronted by what looked to us like bears that had been corrupted in the same way the goblins had been corrupted way back in the first arc. And so we start fighting them because that's, you know, what we had to do. Really cool imagery on Eric's part with when the bear's rushing and I slice it open and the shadow comes out and keeps pace, and it was creepy and good. And I honestly can't remember. I've listened to the episode within the last day, but was there a Cursebringer drama during this battle?
Yeah, mostly just Beric and Cursebringer being kind of catty with each other, frankly.
No, I do remember that argument because Barrett got snooty and was just like, is it okay if I kill these things? And Cursebringer was just like, well, obviously these guys are agents of the darkness. Of course you can kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a fun conversation.
Right. So, but yeah, so we're fighting these bears. And then, I mean, obviously it was the biggest thing to me, but I feel like the biggest consequence of this battle in general, because it affects Barrett's character as well, is that Dex got bitten. And I had no idea what was happening. Black stuff was coursing through my veins, and Philip was looking more and more concerned. And I thought, I didn't know what had happened to my character. I thought maybe that was the end. but then it turns out that I got contracted. Do you contract it? I was infected with.
Yeah. It's a disease.
I mean, I was blessed with, in my opinion.
Infected with, yeah.
Okay. Lycanthropy. And so now Dex has the ability to become a bear. And my stat sheet is just bonkers now.
Yeah.
Really the only stat that changed was my strength, but it was my weakest. I went from a -1 to a +4 modifier in my strength. Next time that we get to level up and choose statistical boosts, I could theoretically become 20 strength and 20 dexterity with my character, which will be fun. but yeah, so Eric, why? Okay, two things. One, why did you decide that was a thing that you were like, no, I'll just make them lycanthropes? And two, did you expect that one of us this would happen to one of us?
It was a moment of just on the fly thinking on my part, because I wanted corrupted bears that were more dangerous than your average bear. And so I pulled up the stat block for werebears just to use, but the flavor of them were just going to be these corrupted bears that lived in the forest. And as the fight progressed, and when Theridat got bit, I just decided I'll have him roll for like some form of the corruption to affect him in some way, and he succeeded. But you all reacted in such a positive way, in the sense of tension and drama, as to like what just happened. I wanted to keep that going, and then when you got bit and failed your constitution save,
mm-hmm.
And never has the term failing upwards been more applicable, then I decided to just stick with lycanthropy and make these corrupted lycanthropes. And that's just kind of where it built over the course of the encounter for me, because I like consequences and I look forward to the less favorable things about lycanthropy to catch up with Dex from time to time.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask is, like, on the surface, from a story standpoint, there are downsides built in because of Beric's allegiances, and that's good from the flavor standpoint, the role playing standpoint. From the mechanical standpoint, it's specifically in battle, and also the other thing was I get advantage on basically all perception checks now, unless you specifically tell me sense of smell will not help you.
Yeah.
Did you know, like, as you looked enough at the werebear to see, no, there's really not a downside here?
I had heard complaints about the lack of a downside to lycanthropy in 5th edition, but I had not... The complaints I heard didn't illustrate the benefits. And so I didn't realize how good it was going to be for you. I just knew that there wasn't a whole lot of bite to it.
Well, and especially with it being a bear, because, you know, each of them, there's bear, rat, wolf, tiger,
boar,
and boar. And some of those have negative something like the were rat is evil aligned, I think, or at least neutral aligned. And the were boar, I think, is the one that is like striving to grow its population.
Yeah.
And then the bear is like good aligned, doesn't even as the bear, if I didn't have control, the first inclination is not to bite. They don't want to turn people necessarily.
Yeah.
So like there's not
mistakes were made.
Well, one thing that with Eberron, and you know, we haven't messed with this very much, but one thing with Eberron is a lot of the rules of like certain things are a certain alignment don't usually apply.
Yeah, sure.
Well, and that's been borne out just in our thing with our own characters' alignments.
Sure.
I mean, they're very nebulous. You know, I mean, we've made explicit comment on these reviewed shows that Dex, my plan was to play him as neutral, but clearly he'd become I don't even know about chaotic good. He's like neutral good.
Well, you're officially neutral good now after the werebear incident.
Yeah, stupid bear. And Beric going from... Would you consider yourself originally as lawful good or maybe lawful neutral?
No, I think that Beric's inclination is toward... I think Beric is kind of constantly in this internal battle between the fact that his religious upbringing is lawful good. I mean, the silver mm-hmm. flame is lawful good. But his impatience tends him towards chaotic. Okay. And so Beric is, as most religious people do, is in a bit of a struggle between his own behavior and wants and the code that his faith would have him uphold.
Gotcha. But yeah, so and I don't want to dwell on it much longer because other things happened in this arc. But so you've already made plans. You're going to figure out ways to make it as much a stumbling block as a bit to balance and not nerf, because it's really just balancing this character.
No, I'm not going to take any of the mechanical benefits away from you. I'm just going to incorporate other mechanical things that maybe wouldn't be classified as a benefit. So
sure. Okay. So, and one of you two might have to jog my memory. I did listen to all three episodes last night. But I was also very tired and drinking. The rest of this episode was us just getting deeper into the woods. We realized that we were being followed by something that we all assumed was probably a wild shaped druid or a trained, what do they call them? Not familiar.
Bird.
Companion.
Yeah.
It was a bird. Yeah. What do they call them? They call them birds. Thanks. And what was you always have an inciting action that you end on, and I don't recall what that was.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was spotting the bird and like that realization that you were being followed. Okay. And that's where we ended the episode.
I think that's right.
So
I
don't think it wasn't a big cliffhanger this time around.
Cause it ended before the encounter with the gibbering mouther.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anything from the first episode that you guys want to talk about that I've missed? Because I guarantee you I missed things.
I mean, very early on in the first episode, you all did start off in Mist Marsh with the official departure of the Red Owl and Crast leaving you and stuff like that.
Oh, but yeah.
And
we just, you mean we just Xandrar. More,
yeah, Xandrar.
Just more of the, are you sure you're going to, God, are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you certain that you're going to be able to get the Red Owl,
yeah,
where she's going
and, yes,
and all that stuff. That's right. But we pretty quickly said we need to get to the Druids.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was,
yeah, not a whole lot happened, but right, that just was there.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I guess the part of the end of the episode between the fight and where we actually ended was mostly just, holy crap, what just happened to Dex?
Yeah.
Right. And we talked about how we, off mic, because you guys had to explain to me off mic, and I had to read in the, was it the player's handbook or is it in the monster manual?
Monster manual.
What I was dealing with now.
Because you're a monster.
Now. Right. So, and so that's how we said it on the show too, is like, and as they walk, they have this conversation.
Right.
And also constantly saying, oh, and we feel Theradaki while we're walking on this thing that just came up that he has no idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, so second episode, we're walking along the path, minding our own business, when all of a sudden...
Mouths. Everywhere mouths.
Yeah, so you said it was a... You said there's mud in the forest and it's dry everywhere else.
And yeah, there's a mud puddle.
And we like started... We tried things, like we tried to detect traps and you did... Did you detect magic or...
Yeah, I did.
And
I could,
or whatever?
I could see that it was magical, but we weren't able to get a handle on what that meant.
Right. And then I loved the thing that you said something about, you know, I don't know why, but I feel like we need to go around this mud. It was like, well, that's just what you do with mud. You go. Yeah. But yeah, so the thing, okay, so explain to me, because I don't know, and I don't know, I mean, I don't know who our listeners are, so I don't know what they know. What is an aberration? I mean, what does that mean? Obviously, it's a... I mean, is it equivalent to an alien species, basically? Or, like, how would you...
Well, I would say that an aberration is... Aberration is kind of a catch-all term for monsters that don't make any sense.
Okay. Right?
I mean, this is basically a big pile of ooze that's full of mouths.
Mm-hmm.
So, alien in the sense of entirely other, right? Like an orc has a recognizable human shape. So does a werewolf or a, you know, a dragon even is recognizable as a creature that makes some sense. Aberrations don't. And in Eberron lore, they originate either from deep underground in Kyber or from a different plane called Zorat.
The realm of madness.
The realm of madness, yes.
Okay, so they aren't, because I remember somebody saying it was from another plane,
mm-hmm,
this one particularly, but that's not all things that might be considered aberrations. There are those that are native to Eberron, but just rarely seen or...
Yeah, kind of mutant creatures are sometimes referred to as aberrations.
Okay. Chuds.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm trying to remember, it attacks first, and it hits Beric, misses Theradak, misses me.
It mouths me pretty good.
While you're blind, so
yes,
just all of a sudden.
Right, after blinding me.
Because it launched a loogie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It shot a spit wad and hit Beric, and he was blind, and he got gummed. Well, not gummed. We should have posted a picture on somewhere, the Facebook group or the website, yeah, or something, of this thing, because it really is, like, gross.
Toothsome.
Yeah.
Okay, so what could it do? Because it blinded Beric, it made Theradak lose his faculties and run away, which is not something that Theradak would do. Like, that's of the three of us, that was the most counter character for Theradak to be the one that runs, because he's equal parts headstrong and well, just plain strong, but
yeah,
but like, well, you know, if it had hit Dex and Dex had dipped out, they would be like, well, I guess that tracks.
Well, the gibbering mouther comes from Zorat, the realm of madness. And so that mechanic represents the gibbering. Like, it's an incomprehensible language that doesn't make any sense, that breaks your mind for a certain amount of time. So if you fail your saving throw against it, there's a table that you roll on, and running away, attacking an ally, dropping everything. Like, there's a bunch of different things that can happen. And so Theridak running away is honestly probably best case scenario for you guys if I roll on that table. Mm-hmm. So,
and explain a little bit. I don't think we've actually really talked about them. Just for those who haven't played with a DM that uses them, the idea of the random outcome table, because you use them a lot. Like, we've used them for, episodes that haven't been released yet. Your crit table is a random outcome table. This was a random outcome table. I feel like we've used them several times other than that as well. But,
well, some things in D&D, they're like the Gibbering Mouther, that's built into the monster card. If you use a Gibbering Mouther, that's what you're signing up for. I mean, Philip and I talk about this on Knowledge Check a few times. I love me a random table just because it alleviates some of the burden off my shoulders of coming up with something neat. And
real quick, what's the Knowledge Check?
It's another podcast that Philip and I do on the Geek Pantheon Network and also on D20 Radio.
That sounds nerdy.
Releases on Tuesday nights sometimes.
Anyway, I'm sorry, my dumb joke.
Yeah, I mean, I really like random encounters, and because they reflect a certain level of reality in D&D, in that it's not everything that happens is in service to a narrative. Like, sometimes you just run into a bear. And so that's why I like them. If you go onto dmsguild.com, which is Wizards of the Coast's digital marketplace, there's a document on there that is pay what you like, including free if you want, called Zerothal's Dungeon Master's Toolkit, and that's just full of a bunch of random tables. So if you're looking for something like that, you can go pick it up there for free and roll to your heart's content.
Yeah, I found one in a it was just somebody posted it on the Reddit, like, here's my thing I use, and it was you roll the percentile die, so they had 100 different items of potions with random. It was like, this is the color, this is the taste, this is the smell, and this is the outcome. Huh. And so the one time I've ever DM'd something, I had them walk into a room that the walls were just stocked with potions. I was like, you each get to pick one, roll. And it led to there was some fun stuff. One of them got an insta-kill potion that tastes like strawberries. Like, that's going to be pretty easy to use one day. But anyway, and there's, what's the, it's a player class. It might be Unearthed Arcana, but I don't think it is. It's like the magical character that doesn't have complete control of their abilities, and there's like a misfire. Oh,
sorcerer. Yeah, the wild magic sorcerer
has a
random table for,
and there's
like every time they cast a spell, basically.
Right. Sometimes it's like the spell works, but also your robe catches fire. Like, there's silly ones,
yeah.
And then there's also really dire ones too.
Well, and in the Dungeon Master's Guide, there's rules for drinking another potion before the duration of the previous potion is run out, like, because you're mixing chemicals
in
your
body. You don't want to mix medicine.
And so horrible things can happen to you if you drink a healing potion and then something else and those ingredients mix in your body. So,
okay. anyway, enough about that. So, but they are fun to play with. If you're a DM and you haven't utilized them yet, outside of the ones where you're explicitly told to.
In the next arc, y'all will see how much fun random tables can be when they go in the player's favor.
I say random, how much fun they can be for me, Philip, and Randy. Not as much fun for Eric. We end up beating, and I got to use bear fighting tactics for the first time because, you know, even though I guess I could have used them during that first battle, I didn't know what was happening, so I didn't do it. But once they explained to me, also, you can turn into a bear. And I was like, I got these claws, and I slash.
But you did not bite it, though.
I didn't. I didn't bite it. But we got healed, right? Like,
yes.
During one of those two encounters, we knew there was somebody out there protecting us because we were mechanically healed, and you told us our characters felt something happening and could even hear, maybe.
Yeah, you heard a faint voice on the wind.
Okay. So we knew there was somebody out there that was at the very least not entirely hating and wanting us to die.
Right.
And do we call out? I know I rolled a perception check and you said that I smell Farland, which was pretty funny.
Yes, you called him. You called him out.
Yeah. And he comes out as a bear. And I loved your description. Like, he's just like a sad bear comes out. And so we have the conversation where we find out that he is not just, we knew he wasn't just a brewer because we saw him, you know, bear fight in the crazy druid things he could do on the train. But he comes out and basically explains that, you know, we knew something was up because he was interested again back on the train fight in everything that we could tell him about when Jacob got abducted. But it turns out he's like deep into this druid coalition, right?
Yeah.
And did you make up that whole thing or is that
all Eberron canon.
Okay. Explain it a little bit. I mean,
Well, it's not until the next episode that you all get the title of his organization, the Gatekeepers.
Right.
But they're like the OG original druids that are tasked with keeping it. It's in the Eberron source material. It's specifically aberrations, right, Philip?
Yeah. They keep the wards that seal away the stuff from the realm of Zorat.
And so I modified their mission a little bit to just be the bad planes, just to bring them into sure. the narrative a little bit cleaner. And so, yeah, that's their deal. They were the ones that learned the original druidic magic. And it's this tradition that is carried on for over 1,000 years in Eberron. Originally they were all orcs. Mm-hmm. So,
but we have to convince Farland that it's better if we don't abort and let him and his group handle it. Like, not saying they couldn't, just saying, you know, we're useful and strong and really wanna. and what was the name of the shifter?
Shayla.
And it seems like she outranks Farland. Or maybe it could just be they're the same and he needed someone from his group to say, yes, this is a good idea.
I was just trying to play with they're both like gatekeepers, like same rank. Mm-hmm. But Farland was clearly letting his emotional state right. get in the way of good decision making, and she stepped in as a non-biased third party and was like, no, these guys can be useful.
Right.
Like, come on, let's go. So,
well, is there a hierarchy or is it just there's Grow and then there's the rest of them?
There's Grow and then everyone else.
Okay.
So why do all the random NPCs have temper issues, Eric?
Yeah, Eric.
What? What?
So yeah, even the good guys are just crotchety a-holes.
Bala isn't.
That's true.
And the red owl kept her cool all the time.
Ugh. Yeah, she was the worst.
That's the worst person.
So they blind us and walk us around. We agree to be blinded, and because we kind of had to
take you on a very circuitous path through the woods,
right? And so right before the episode ends, they unblind us and we just see a congress of druids. How many did you say? Just hundreds,
if not that. I mean, it is the gathering of druids. It's not just the gatekeepers. It's the Wardens of the Woods, all the other druid factions out there that don't have names in Eberron canon, like all the druids have gathered at Greenheart to try and figure out what's going on with Mabar. So,
right. Okay. And there's a big old tree and then you end the episode.
Yep. We went outside, took a break, talked about things. All the players were still happy speaking to me. Yes, and then the third episode.
This was before the dark times. Okay, so let's just gloss over.
Let's do it chronologically.
That's what I'm saying, but we're gonna do it quickly. We are told there was a dragon that has. Okay, so Grow, your stupid name.
I didn't think about Grow. Like honestly,
stupid.
Is that actually the name of the head of the gatekeepers, or did you just make that up?
I made that up.
Yeah. Yep.
What is it?
Keith Baker is far more creative than I am. Grow Terran, I think was his name. Grow Terra.
Something like that. It's Terra something. Like,
Grow Strong Branch was in my head. I think that was a joke that we made.
Yep.
So Grow explains to us, basically, it really just clarifies what we already either knew or assumed, that something, some planar division was breaking down and the shadows really wanted to get into our plane and wreck shop.
Well, he talked about the fact that it's not just a planar division, like based on tracking the planes and the way they come into relation with Eberron, the material plane, this shouldn't ever really happen. Mabar never gets this overlapped with the material plane. And so something's happening and they're trying to figure it out.
Okay.
So,
they explain, you know, we need to complete this one gate. The keystone is missing. A dragon took it. Go get it. And you explain the dragon is gone.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was a bit more eloquent than your recap. But
no, that's pretty much how I remember it.
Well, and it's an important dragon for Eberron history because Varak is the first dragon to teach the druidic magic, right? This is this is the originator of druids in Eberron.
And so they basically said you need to go find the dragon's hoard, enter it, get the keystone, and come back. And if I remember correctly, Gro explicitly said, this is a 100% fact. There is no way around this. If you touch anything besides the keystone, everything will die.
It was something to that effect.
That's what I remember.
No.
He said,
this place is sacred to us, and we would ask you to not take anything other than the keystone. That is what he said.
Yeah.
There was no doom and gloom about it.
And then I made some comment about how I was disappointed we wouldn't get any loot. And you said, well, you can.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I did.
Yes. You laughed like that. I listened to it last night. You laughed in exactly that way.
Yeah, that's how I remember it.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
I mean, I wish there was some record. I wish we could listen to it somehow. But, you know, it's lost to the winds of time. Sands of time? It's lost.
The wind. Time has sand and wind. You know?
Okay.
On our way, Beric tries to find out how to cure lycanthropy.
Yep.
Yeah, he does.
And Gro promised to put together a list for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, I just remembered the thing out of the second episode when we were talking, when Farland calls me Lyle and Dak gets confused almost ruins the ruse. And like I explained to him in character, and he said, I need to roll for insight check. And I was like, no, it's all true. That's the thing, though. I'm saying truth words.
I think he was taking the term insight and apply, like, would Theridak be able to process everything?
Right.
I think is.
Right. But we got that cleared up, too. It was no big deal. But so, yeah, on the way, Heat talks about lycanthropy and how to cure it. And
because mm-hmm. It's bad.
Because he has a prejudicial view of lycanthropy.
Look, within like, I mean, this is 200 or 300 years ago, there's this zombie apocalypse plague of lycanthropy.
Right.
So.
And I get that.
It's like five generations after the zombie apocalypse, you get bit by a zombie and try to convince me, no, it's cool. It's cool. I got this. Totally okay. Not interested in eating anyone's brains.
Right. But that is true. I mean, Beric's whole life, he has grown up with these stories of the scourge of lycanthropy. So I get it, I guess. but anyway, we had to give the dragon something worthy.
Well,
something.
You touched a tree mm-hmm. and spoke to Olain.
Yeah, I got to talk to the big druid, the big pine tree.
Mm-hmm.
And
which I don't feel like we took enough advantage of.
No, you did not.
Like we could have done a lot of touching trees and finding things out.
Yeah. If we'd had any reason at all to doubt the authority of Gro, I guess we could have consulted Gro on whether or not we were really allowed to take anything. But I feel like it was made so clear that Gro's authority in this matter was absolute that there was really no reason to have that conversation.
I agree. I think that's, yeah. That is unassailable logic.
Mm-hmm.
So we touch the tree. The tree says, you have to make an offering.
I love this bit. This was such a great moment.
It really was. It was Theranak took his favorite rock, mm-hmm. put it on the ground, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, like, would you, if we had made, I mean, if we had made an unworthy offering, you'd have been like, try again.
Nothing would have happened.
Right. Let me ask this. Did you allow that to be the thing because of the quality of the rock, or because the dragon or the spirit or whatever could tell of the personal sacrifice?
Yeah. It's involved. Sacrifice. Yeah. That's what was involved.
Sure.
Well, and the specific requirements was that it had to demonstrate that we understood the heart of the gatekeepers. And so this thing where Theradak finds these beautiful little bits of nature and collects them, it was such a good, clever thing to catch for Randy.
Yeah, it really was. He was on the spot with that, and it was really good. And, you know, Theradak in a lot of ways is the completion of our group in the sense of the sweetness, like the sweet personality of our group that Draconos had in a different package, but there's still very much I don't think either Dex or Beric have like emotional attachments to the things that they have that would be considered a sacrifice outside of, well, if I give it my weapon, it's a sacrifice, but it's not an emotional one, you know? Mm-hmm.
I just want to let all the players know, because obviously this is a podcast, some editing goes into it. We just talked about how the lycanthropy thing, there was 15 minutes of dead air cut out while we figured out what just happened.
Well, I did a lot of giggling. It wasn't just dead air.
But the Theradak thinking to sacrifice his favorite stone there was no editing. He just mm-hmm. did it. So mm-hmm. it was really, really good on Randy.
Mm-hmm. So the ground opens up, and we are able to enter the hoard, or at least the cavern.
The mound on the ground that is round.
Yeah. All right.
So, yeah.
So we go down, and we see... First off, you try to detect magic, and apparently just the whole thing.
Yeah, right? Everything's magic.
Right. So we see food. And we knew immediately all of this is illusory. Everything is magic, or everything is imbued with magic, or...
Everything was imbued with magic, but we verified that it was not illusory because we were able to touch everything.
Right, sure. I guess when I say illusory, I don't mean non-corporeal. I just mean it was... Yeah, fine. Everything was imbued with magic. And since we knew that up front and we had been told... It's very important that you don't touch anything.
Hey, guys, would you do me a solid and not take anything that is sacred to my people?
That is so not how it was expressed.
No, that's how he said it.
No, he didn't. He said, this place is sacred to us.
Please don't take anything.
The thousand druids and the big giant tree standing around here
ask you to not take anything.
Yeah. That's sort of kind of the thing that you say when you're being polite and implying and will, like, nuke you if you don't, if you do.
Well,
yeah, I mean, it'd be a shame if anything happened to the place.
I mean, it would have been theft. Like, that's what they were trying to convey. You're dealing with the law enforcement of the land. Like,
sure.
You're about to walk into the Smithsonian. Don't take the Declaration of Independence, please.
Except, as it turns out, it would not have been.
Well, no, but well, I'm just talking about their warning.
Let's not get too terribly ahead of ourselves. So,
for those of you listening to this episode that haven't listened to,
the
why? Other why show. Would you do that?
So,
stop now.
Yeah, solid point.
Go listen to the podcast.
So, but we know everything is imbued with magic. We know that it and a powerful one. So, when we're offered a thing, we have to think, don't touch the thing, don't eat the thing.
And I think at this point, the nature of the trap wasn't quite evident to us, because while we know that Theradak really likes food, an offer of food would be reasonable to all of us.
It is nothing on par to the next two rooms as far as, but
it was an escalation.
Sure.
And a gift of food made, I mean, it's what the voice of Varrak said to you. You are travelers who must have traveled a long way to get here. Please have some food. I'm sure it's been a hard journey.
But instead, we didn't do that.
We did the reasonable thing and right. listened to the all-authoritative druid who had advised us against it.
Instead of the dragon.
The leader of the army.
Okay, now hold on a minute. You say instead of the dragon. Tell me why we knew that was the dragon.
They told you that the horde was imbued with the spirit of Varak.
I specifically asked, is this the voice of Varak? And got silence.
Well, you wouldn't.
Yeah, we asked lots of questions.
I'm not going to do the math for you. Like,
you dick.
We asked lots of questions.
Uh-huh. And got no answers. So anyway, so we bypass the food. Now, you have said if we had taken the voice up on any of its offers, there would have been no repercussions. Or that we would have gotten what we were trying to do. We could have eaten the food, we could have read the books, we could have saved people from the water and still
everyone
could have gone to the horde, gotten the piece, and left.
Mm-hmm.
And then, just to twist the knife further, you said, and for all you know, the food could have made you stronger and bigger and more attractive. Were you really going to do that?
Did I put it that way?
It was something.
It sounds like something that shows up in your spam folder.
Is that true?
Yeah, it was true.
What was it?
I don't...
Tell me.
We just started talking again before this episode started. I don't want
no, to... okay, that is not true. We did, none of us stopped talking to Eric.
Don't break kayfabe.
I mean, we didn't want to talk to Eric, but we had to.
Yeah.
But no, what would have happened if let's say we all sat down and ate?
You would have basically... And I don't know if this would have been impactful to any of you. Well, I mean, first off, you would have gained a level.
Oh, come on!
And you would have had the opportunity for a full respec. Like, if you wanted to switch class, if you wanted to shift stats around, Varak would have imbued you with the ability to make yourself whatever you felt was needed for the fight ahead.
So if we'd eaten the food, well, and you may not have done this yet.
It was getting there.
Oh, man.
I mean, it like my logic, it wasn't just a hearty har har. I'm going to screw everyone over because I know what they're going to think. Like, I genuinely expected, I was fearful to a certain extent that Philip was going to be the one to like, crack the code because it's Varak's horde. I did drop that Varak's spirit is imbued there, and Varak is unequivocally a benevolent spirit in Eberron. Like, she did nothing but good for the quote unquote lesser races of Eberron. And so a lot, like in the context of the world, I feel like it all makes sense. It's not a swerve for the sake of a swerve. Now, if Philip wants to say, no, I'm wrong, that's fine.
Philip does want to say that.
Well, do you actually believe that?
Philip wants to scream that. I didn't know that Varak was pure benevolence. I mean, I didn't. I know that there are good dragons and evil dragons and everything, but.
I didn't trust that was the voice of Varak. I felt like every logical reaction based on what we had been told says this is a test. We were supposed to. An important thing that we leave out of the conditions was if you prove yourself worthy,
oh yeah,
you'll be allowed to take the item from the horde.
That was definitely said by the tree, I think.
Maybe by the tree. I don't recall. Yes, it was because we asked what the dangers were in the horde. Theridak did. Theridak asked Olaine what the dangers were in the horde, and he said that as if we proved ourselves worthy or something to that effect or pure of heart or I don't know, remember exactly.
I mean, I'm not trying to refute your all's points, but I feel the need to defend my story to a certain extent.
We don't think you were actually trying
to
screw with
us. I know, but...
You just did end up screwing with us, unintentionally.
I get that the context of Olaine makes it seem more... non-biased than Grow, but Olaine is a druid with the same feelings about this place that Grow has. I mean, It's just that Olaine may have known Varak.
I'm just saying we were set up to expect a test.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So that's what this seemed to be.
Okay.
And also, it's not like you've really thrown a lot of good at us, Eric.
Try to help you guys out.
The very first, the very first arc, we ended up getting some sweet magical items, but in the 17 sessions we've played since then, or whatever it's been, it's not like we've just stumbled upon riches. So we go into the second room.
The second room. Let's talk the second room.
Am I incorrect? Like, obviously, all three rooms would have been. There was benefit to taking up the offer in all three rooms for all three of us. But did you design? It just seems like the book room was very much for Barrick.
I included some stuff to try and tempt you a little bit. Also, I mean, honestly, Theridak just has a pretty airtight, chill, simple backstory to where there's not a whole lot to poke and prod at him with. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I tried to incorporate some elements of the book room to intrigue you as well. But
right. And I don't want to say that the third room was necessarily for Dex, because that's such a huge, broad thing that all three of us were going
to get. It was for everybody.
Yeah. But it seemed like the middle room, and it may have just been because of the book, of the things you said. You said there's the history of Eberron, and here's something about, you may have said it as a joke, your family specifically, but I feel like you said something about, or the
history
gentry,
of the great families.
The great families, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And because you also said the thing about the quarry. And the, you know,
which Sarlona,
which was where Dex is from. And, but yeah, this is when things started to get contentious. and we were still operating under the guise, or under the thought that this was all a test to make sure that we were going to be worthy to take the keystone. So I don't think, okay, Philip, was there a point where you, Philip, was like, let's just see what happens? Or was it the whole time when you were doing the internal struggle thing? Was that just for character and role playing?
I mean, it was essentially, I thought that it would actually be possible to take and read the books, and that the consequence of that might be we fail to get the keystone. And I was trying to decide whether Barrick was focused enough on the task to care more about the keystone than about all of the things that he could potentially get out of an hour in this room.
Sure.
But logically and from a reasonable perspective, Dex intervened to prevent him from having to make that choice entirely by finishing opening the door.
Right. Well, I was trying to think, how would Dex do this, see this, and being somebody who has spent his whole life with deceitful people, the first thing that I thought was, this is a test. I was still operating under that condition. Who's to say, when you were saying anything like, but reading a book's not taking a book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, but touching a book could be enough for us to fail this test, and then it all disappears anyway. There's no guarantee that you'd be able to sit down and read.
Sure.
These are book spines. They are not, there's no guarantee. We ought not judge these books by their covers. it was tempting for Dex, but it was obviously very tempting for Barrick.
I think the fact that everything was magical helped Barrick to perceive it, to see it as a danger. Mm-hmm. Because if everything just reeks of magic, if this is a room with actually physical old books, it would have been, I think, harder for him to move on, because, well, if I grab a book, it's not immediately going to just vanish and crumble to dust, and I'm going to hear the, you know,
right,
mocking laughter of this disembodied voice. And then monsters attack us out of the walls or something.
Right. The room starts filling with hot oil.
Right.
But so Okay, Eric, did you, let's suppose that we took advantage of this one. I don't have to ask what would happen because we would gain the knowledge of the thing that we read. Like, that's the reward.
Yeah.
But did you have, like, let's say Philip pulled down a book about his dad. And I'm correct in that, Philip, you're not controlling the backstory of your father. Eric is, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about him.
Did you have stuff ready to go?
Yeah, I have his dad's whole backstory already written.
Okay.
So.
And you would have just dropped it on him? We'd have taken a recording break and you'd have dropped some info on him? Cool.
I like all of the stuff that I tease you guys with, like the father, the patron, like the gaps in your backstories that you intentionally left in there, like the stuff with your backstory. I have all that stuff written out in case something happens.
Like a magical bookstore.
Yeah. So
we go into the third room and it's a basin full of water on a pedestal. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And
glowing with blue light.
Right. And the voice explains to us that we can see in this water anyone that is... Did they have to be alive?
No, it just told you if you approach the water and speak their name or their title or their relationship to you, their meaning to you, you will see them and they will be cured of all ills.
And
brought to you.
I was like, extracted. And brought to us. So theoretically, we could have saved Jacob.
Saved Draconis.
Saved Draconis. Seen where the red owl was.
Brought the red owl back to you.
Rescued whatever is up with your family.
Uh-huh. And potentially brought your mother back from the dead.
Sure.
I mean...
Would Beric have wanted to do that?
Is that something... I have thought about that since then, but... And I don't know. I don't know that I obviously that hadn't come up in Beric's life, and so probably he would not have considered this question beforehand. But the whole idea of the silver flame is that when you die, your spirit becomes a part of the flame, and so the flame is strengthened by the death of by the souls of those who have followed it. And so resurrecting someone would be to weaken the flame.
Gotcha.
So it would be a heavier thing than it might otherwise in a magical world.
Yeah.
But I guess you could have walked up and said, my father, and seen exactly
who he was. I don't know that he's dead.
Right. Exactly. No, granted, it may have.
I do.
Shut
yes,
up.
I know. So does the stupid sword.
You remarkable dick. But yeah, and that's, you know, that was, I decided to make that the hard room for Dex just simply because.
That makes sense. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's hard room for everybody, but that was the one that I was like, all right, I can't boldly walk through this next door. I can't walk past this pedestal, basically.
Well, and except for Theridak, because that just reinforced to me that Randy doesn't really have a whole lot of hardship in his life because he just walked past it and was like, nope, let's go. And it was like, well, okay, there's nobody that you'd want to bring back?
Well, I mean, he did talk while we were walking. This may be in the next arc, but I don't think it is. He did talk while we were walking about not getting to see battle, but people that he trained
with
dying in the war. So he could have had that. But I think he's also a pragmatist about the horrors of war.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, they died honorably. But yeah, no, he doesn't have – because he didn't – he wasn't there at the beginning with Jacob. He didn't see Jacob get abducted like we did. He never met Draconis. So well, I think
he has a very down-to-earth idea of the danger of extraordinarily powerful magic.
Yeah,
sure. So we go through the door, and we enter the Horde.
Well, I guess, sorry, just touching on that, I guess that's a point to his character of being a soldier in the last war, because he's the only one amongst you that was that. He probably has a very different point of view on the morning, like in that level of magic just being dropped on the world.
Sure.
Like that could have been him if he was stationed in Kyre. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
That makes sense. So, but we go through the door and we enter the horde. And at what point, Eric, did you say the thing that made us all despise you?
As soon as you got in there, as soon as you looked at the horde, the voice told you, you have rejected my gifts. Take what you came for and go.
And there was a lot of angry silence mm-hmm. that got cut out. Like, there was a lot of just all of us staring at each other, open mouthed, and then side-eyeing Eric, and then kind of going, are you seriously? All of that was going to, you, so, a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like,
I love you all.
I mean, obviously the anger that you hear in our voices as we're playing our characters
is real.
No, it was
editing that. I was just like, oh my God, I didn't even pick up on half of this when I was at the moment at the table.
It was
relive. This is awful.
It was acting, but it was a very easy well to draw from at the time. I mean, cause, you know, obviously Beric was angry that he'd been talked out of reading these books and Dex was angry that he had let, I don't
passed
know how
up
to
the
say
Godwell.
It. Say what?
Passed up the Godwell.
Yeah. Like that he, you know, he's still getting used to this whole benevolence and rule following and stuff. And this is the first time that it has backfired on him. This is the first time that following the rules hasn't worked for Dex. And so, you know, in my head, I was honestly like, what's Dex going to take from this besides maybe it'd be better if I started doing my own thing, not doing my own thing, like leaving the party, wandering off, but doing my own thing. Like I need to stop letting this morality that suddenly is in me guide me.
Yeah.
Which obviously I didn't. When you listen to the next arc, I mean, he's still Dex. He's still kind of a jerk, but he's not gone rogue yet. yeah, I know. It's just, it's the right term. But anyway, so that anger that you hear in our voices is, it is us manifesting our disappointment in the choices that we made as players into anger as characters. And, so we take the stupid rock and we go back to the, or it's wood, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we go back to grow.
And have a conversation with him.
Yeah. And I don't even remember that conversation right now. This episode seriously dropped yesterday.
It started with him asking, how'd it go?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Beric just seethed. Like, Beric didn't really say much for a while, I think, right?
Yeah. Eventually he started trying to, like, he just started talking about it more. Like, we expressed our frustration, and he's like, well, I'm sorry, but, and then it sort of turned into, like Eric's defense of his behavior.
Yeah.
And so
Ro was the mouthpiece for Eric.
It was either hand him the piece of wood and start the ritual or punch him. And Beric went with hand him the piece of wood to start the ritual.
Right. So yeah, so let's get to the end. Cause I have some questions about that and it won't just be us recapping the episode, which while it's fun for us, I don't know how fun it is. Let's do. So the ritual starts and they are able to keep the bad guys from crossing over, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the lich doesn't come out or anything. The only thing that comes out of the gate is Jacob. A person that we didn't immediately know was Jacob. So here's, and of course he's wearing the lock and he says we have to go find Gran and, or Graham. Gran? Graham.
Graham.
Graham. Oh, yeah. It's an M as in Marvin, not an N as in Narvin. Narvin. So Mancy, not Nancy. So we, my question is, at what point did you decide this is how Jacob, at what point did you decide Jacob was going to come back?
Oh, very early on. I mean, I throw some hard to deal with stuff at you all, but child murder is not something that I'm real keen on putting on this podcast that's supposed to be fun for everybody.
With three parents that you're playing with.
So yeah, I mean, I decided really early on that I decided both that Jacob was coming back and this whole scene has been in my head since we started the campaign.
Okay. And that's what I was wondering. Like you never intended for the three of us or whoever we're playing at the time to go to Jacob to get him. Like, or I guess you could have been planning for that contingency, but that was never, we were never going to be required.
That was never the plan.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's good to know because that guy beat the tar out of us. Whatever he wants to. I don't care about bears and cursed swords and any of that stuff. That guy was strong. Do you have anything, Philip?
Riveting stuff, guys.
I still, you're still on the you're toeing the line here.
I'm still in the doghouse,
as it were.
Yeah, if you have more questions about the Jacob stuff than what we address here, tune in for the next episode of Eberron Renewed.
Yes,
a conversation with Jacob.
Yes, yes.
And we do what he says, and we go and find Graham, and she gives us some
spoilers.
Yeah, this arc and the next one are more directly connected than previous ones have been. Like previously, there's been a little more of a self-contained episodic nature to the arc.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been kind of monster of the week, and now it's narratively. I mean, they've all been vaguely tied together, somehow. But this is very much, yeah.
Like, we is pick that up moments later?
Is that the plan from now on? Are we getting into
no? Our story? I still want to have kind of those. It's really important to me to have things for you all to do that aren't directly connected to the narrative, because both for you as players and you all, the listeners. I don't want you to get burnt out on the story and just be like, we're still going, we're still going, we're still going. I want to have those breaks of like, this other thing is going on. So go deal with that. Like, go deal with these terrorists that are holed up in a town outside of the woods and stuff like that. So.
Okay. Here's the thing. Now you made Jacob 15 years older and we get into it more in the next episode, but I mean, you do explicitly say that he's 15 years older. So clearly time works very differently in these other planes. And we discussed this. He'd been gone for a couple of weeks. Is that what we kind of decided?
Yeah, we worked out a couple of weeks. Yeah.
I think the way it actually ended up breaking down when we did the math after we recorded, it was like a year a day around there. Like one day here is a year there.
So we have... we are on a deadline to find Draconis because tieflings have humanoid lifespans, right?
Yeah.
And he was already in his 20s.
3 years out from on his side of the veil, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's another crazy thing. If we had looked into this well and been like, we need Draconis back. God, we'd have to Skype in Trevor for every episode.
Hey, guys.
Oh man, that's probably a good thing that we didn't do that. Not that I wouldn't love to play with Trevor again. The ending was straightforward.
Yeah.
It turns out that yes, there is, given sufficient combined power, in this case, all of the druids' magic, there is a
all
way to...
All of the druids everywhere.
And we don't know that it's...
so screwed.
we don't...
No, this was specifically, like, I did describe this. It was like... 50 druids came with you to channel their magic to open this up.
Okay.
The rest stayed back to continue the conference.
And we don't know for sure that it took all 50. It could have been overwhelming force. They could have done it with 25 of them.
The three of us have got it.
but what we know is with sufficient power, specifically magical.
Sufficient responsibility.
Well,
shut up.
This is just something that it struck me as... almost kind of shocking on this side of the table as the DM. This is a little bit spoilery for the top of the next arc, but it's understandable. Like, you got Jacob back. Jacob said, let's go find Graham. So you did that thing. You all never, like, all the druids did was open a doorway to Mabar and something almost came through. You all never asked what they were attempting to accomplish with that. And so
that is certainly true.
That just struck me as odd that nobody went, hey, guys, that seemed like it was going to be real bad. What did you do there? So,
well, we weren't in the best headspace.
No, and I get
we'll
that.
We'll see Farley again. We'll ask him.
Or will you?
I guess that's up to you.
It's going to be a while before there's friendly conversation with druids.
Yeah. Yeah, we weren't going to sit down and have coffee with Gro. But so... Again, we know that there is a way to, at the very least, prevent things from coming through the gate. But obviously, we can't just send out a missive stationing 50 druids at every gate for perpetuity.
Right.
I mean, I guess we could. Like, really. But...
I mean, I think the message here is we need to retire because the gatekeepers have got this.
That's what it sounds like to me. I'm just gonna go turn into a bear and live in the woods, and poop there is what I'm told. that bears do in fact poop in the woods. So here's the thing: we have a lot of other stuff that we want to talk about, but there's just zero way we can talk about it without spoiling, if not the next whole arc, at least the next episode. And I feel like we certainly tried, and I feel like we've done a good job of not getting ahead of ourselves on these reviewed podcast episodes. So we are going to end the episode here. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Really, really, really though, the next episode is an info dump of, like, we learned so much, both the players and the characters. And so will you. And then just some fun episodes. The next arc's great. I think I'm the most proud of it, of any that we've done personally. I'm not going to speak for the other guys. But thank you for listening. As always, we want to turn your attention to the music that we use in the podcast, and that is done by Kevin MacLeod. You can find all of his music two places. One is freepd.com, and that's all of his public domain stuff that you can just use. The other is incompetech.com. incompetech.com, and that is Creative Commons. So if you use it, you do have to give him credit somewhere, either on your website, in your podcast, provided you're publishing it. You can do whatever you want around the table. You can play Lynyrd Skynyrd around your table. Nobody's going to know. but
I mean, on it, like, the ambient style music Kevin MacLeod does, like, it, I would recommend using it even around your private table. Like, it's high enough quality to where put that on a loop and it does good things.
Yeah, we don't do that in real time. Like, when we're recording the episodes, we don't hear the music, but I can imagine if we did, how much, like, maybe we should do something where we can pipe something into the headsets when we're playing, because it would heighten everything, I think. It definitely makes it fun to listen to.
Yeah.
Even though I know what's going to happen, there's still some, like, tension and stuff because of the music that's playing. Anyway, so that's him, Kevin MacLeod, and he's great. Thanks to the D20 Radio Network for letting us represent D&D 5e in their stable of podcasts. I'm still amazed that they, before we even released the first episode, they were like, yes, we'll have you on and you can do this. They show a lot of faith. Well, that Eric had earned through the other podcasts, for sure. Mm-hmm. But it's a good network to be a part of. There are a lot of great podcasts on there. Please go check them out. And that is, maybe reach out to us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. Everything is just at the Geek Pantheon. And that's it. Hope you guys have a wonderful week, and we will catch you next Friday with the first episode of the next arc, which probably has a very elementary title, but I don't know it yet.
Hey.
Out of the Gloaming. So anyway, thanks for listening. I'm Jeff.
I'm Philip.
That went well. Let's try again. So thanks for listening. I'm Jeff.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Philip.
Yeah, that went better. God damn it. Bye.
See ya.